us in the Aboriginal voices. Oska dewa nyawar oska ne jota FM CFRC.
It's 7 o'clock and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. Douglas.
Yes, Sean.
Once again, we're here for another, what, 10 minutes?
No. 15? You're here till 8 o'clock tonight, so don't worry. We got lots of time.
But we could leave early, couldn't we?
No.
Like our guest isn't here.
Not yet. Don't worry. We've got time. It's just 7 o'clock, and we're hoping that there aren't too many people or too much traffic out there to hold him up. Who knows? You know what it's like.
Doesn't he walk?
Oh, no.
I think he walks everywhere. He drives?
Yeah. Don't you?
Wow. I drive, but I come from a ways. He just comes from next door.
You come from away.
I do.
Are you a Newfoundlander?
I am. I did good. Did you see that? You haven't seen that, right?
No.
I've seen it. We went and seen it up there in...
I was there in Gander.
Yeah. We went and seen... You were right here. That was a Tuesday when that happened.
Your memory is good.
It was. It was a Tuesday, I remember, because we went on.
Uh-huh. And then, oh my goodness, look out.
No. It happened in the morning. That morning it happened. Mm-hmm. That's tomorrow. It is. It's the come from away starts tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. September 11th.
Yes.
2001.
Yeah, was it 2001? Yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty sure.
I suppose I can look on the box there. But
the people in Gander took care of everybody who landed their airplane safely.
How many years has it been? To have been like a lot? 23 years?
Mm-hmm.
23 years ago. When it happened,
and you still remember,
we were out there. We were at work, and like it popped up on our whatever screens, and the fella. Mm-hmm. Well, we all kind of chipped in, but we went and found the TV that was not connected to no cable or anything like that. It was you plug in an antenna, and. We jerry-rigged an antenna for to watch the Channel 6 News. Back then it was CJOH. CKWS too.
And you may have.
That, because they were around then.
Mm-hmm.
So, 23 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe it? Anyways, it rocked a nation. People were rattled for a couple of months anyways. And, there you go. September 11, 2001. Anyways, that's tomorrow. So, you know.
It's a sad day.
Take a few minutes out. You take a few minutes out and, mm-hmm. A moment of silence for the folks who have fallen. And... In that horrific event.
And you also have to, think of the first responders.
Because some of them fall out on them as well.
That's right. They did. Some of them did make it through that day, but then years later. Have difficulties. So. Wow.
Was that you, Doug?
Yeah, it's
maybe
my
we
stomach.
Should go to music.
I'm getting hungry. All right, I can go to music for you. You ready?
Yeah.
In the room of many a poor boy and God knows.
Aboriginal voices.
Well, you know, it's interesting because CFRC is definitely broadcasting tonight, and we are live on the air. And thanks to Nathan for jumping in and letting folks know. It's really nice to have some of the language coming in, because I heard Cree on the radio today here at CFRC. I think it was around 5 o'clock, between 5 and 5:30, and there was another show earlier on Monday, I think around between 10 and 12 o'clock.
And
they had Indigenous musicians and Indigenous language spoken there too. So I applaud all of the work that people are doing around CFRC to bring knowledge of the various people around the world, right? So, Sean, what else are we going to talk about tonight? You had something that you were going to bring up to me, and we got distracted a bit.
No, I am not. Mm. Did you talk earlier about...
I did. Just a little bit about
Manitoba legislature.
Oh, not the legislature, but I did talk about the the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs Grand Chief Kathy Merrick.
She'll be lying in wait. She'll be lying in state at the Manitoba legislature.
That was today, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. And so that's they know they only really offer that to.
Dignitaries.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah.
So it says here that the First Nations leaders said they have lost a great leader, a warrior, and a powerful voice, but vowed to continue the advocacy work of Kathy Merrick as they paid tribute to the late Grand Chief of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs on Saturday. Also, this is Saturday. Well, that was unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Canada tried to quash First Nation land claim with this handwritten 1889 ruling.
A handwritten ruling?
Apparently.
Tell me, who wrote it?
I don't know. Like, you look at this thing, and it's hard to say who wrote such things.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, it failed.
Oh.
So, you know, it's like, spoiler.
Right.
Spoiler, you don't have to read the rest of the story now.
Well, yes, I want to know.
It's like Canada tried to quash First Nation land claim with this handwritten 1889 ruling. Dot. Period. End of thought. Mm-hmm. The next thought. It failed.
The ruling failed or the handwritten note failed?
I don't know. It failed.
There's a lot at stake here.
So it says here, literally thousands of square kilometers of land in Ontario, which was arguably never ceded by the First Nation band that previously occupied it.
Oh.
Well, you want to hear more, Douglas?
I do, yes.
It feels like something you might want to know. Mm-hmm. Earlier this summer, an Ontario Superior Court judge inspected a historical document. And he was pleased, impressed even.
Why?
I don't know. It was a handwritten stack of papers, cursive and unadorned, clear and not at all frilly, capable following invisible lines, written in a practiced hand that saved its restrained flourishes for the curly-cued squiggles that preceded capital F's as F's or A's or G's.
Yes. That, you know, when you start looking back at cursive writing a long time ago, it's very different. Once you get the swing of it, you understand.
It says here that the judge was surprisingly ecstatic, aesthetic, and easily legible handwriting, says judge. Mm-hmm. In reading it, one cannot help but commend the penmanship of his author, commented Justice Edward M. Morgan in the new ruling. Even the wet ink smears were few and far between.
Well, you know, did you do that kind of writing with a pen and ink and a quill pen? Or a straight nib pen?
Have I done that? Well, I've dabbled in calligraphy.
Oh, okay.
Yes, there used to be sets you could buy, calligraphy sets.
Yeah.
You probably can still get them at the stationery store.
Right.
But you get that and you put your ink in, and I think you put it in a little tube and yada yada. This is what I found was most gratifying. If you gave it a flick, the ink would come out.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was endlessly entertaining.
Did you also have a blotter? Yeah, because you get those little blotters and then you can...
I looked at it, Doug, and it was cool, and I made my name a dozen times, and then that was it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When I was in grade seven...
Turns out it was a little bit more...
When I was in grade seven, they gave us penmanship classes.
I realized that.
We had first,
they should bring that back, Doug.
First, we learned how to put this metal
nib
into the stock without sending it in to cut you.
Yeah. And then you had probably the inkwell.
Yes.
There. Mm-hmm. When I went to school, we had the hole in the desk.
But no ink.
But no ink. They wouldn't give us ink. Invariably, the question was, what's the hole for? Mm-hmm. And they'd say, for ink.
Right.
Back in the day. Yeah. And then, that was it. Mm-hmm. That was the extent of the a lesson, was that as for ink.
Yeah.
That's about the attitude as well. And so I would go home and ask Mom. Mm-hmm. Mom was a wealth of information. She said that's where they used to put the ink for back in the day. She says, when I was a little girl,
right,
we used to put the ink in there. Mm-hmm. And it was in a bottle or something
it was
a jar. yeah. a jar of ink would fit
really
into that.
Really tiny jar would go in, just a yeah. little
swale. I don't think they have that in the desks now, right?
No, they don't. Like they don't even have space for that now.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. that whole...
Just think, if they've saved these carpenters all this work of drilling holes just the right size, or the guys making the glass bottles to hold them.
The glass bottles.
Yeah.
Out of business now.
Yeah. They're gone.
Who's going to use these now? Computers. Thanks. But what did she say? She told me a story of someone... I don't think it was her, but someone else, a female,
mm-hmm.
and the fella behind.
Oh, these are stories that I heard too, I guess.
The fella behind this said female, because she had long hair,
mm-hmm.
he decided maybe it was a good idea to dip her hair in the ink. As I am understand, it was maybe it didn't go over very well. I think maybe he had to.
He had to wait till it dried before they could deal with it.
Yeah, there was problems. I think
mm-hmm.
I want to go into the problems, but there was problems. That not interesting for you, Doug?
It you is. Want to talk it about is interesting, but stuff? I lived through that when I was a kid. Yeah,
you were probably the guy. Say, oh, that hair, that
no,
looks
no,
like
no.
it's... want to paint.
Wait a sec. We only picked on people with blonde hair.
I want to paint. I want to paint with the ink. And then you take the hair and paint out your name on the paper.
Actually, we did that. We used to get horse hair.
Horse hair.
You know, yeah. The best horse hair? No, you didn't go behind the horse to get it.
Is that what you
got
call
you got
it
the
on
person the
in front of you?
No. You got the horse hair from the mane. That was the best.
All right.
Not the tail.
No, I've heard that the horse hair is pretty good.
You can run into trouble trying to get the tails.
So it appears that this judge was more interested in the penmanship than the actual information.
Okay.
But this was not an exercise of, right here, in antique handwriting analysis. The appreciation for the first handwritten words announced the significance. This action is brought by the Attorney General of Ontario on behalf of Her Majesty the Queen against John Harvey Francis. The Queen herself.
Ah. Good.
Wonder which queen it was. Tell me, Doug. Do you know?
Well, in that year would be Queen Victoria.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's 1889, right?
The queen in question was Victoria, not Elizabeth. Yeah. And as he read this handwritten court judgment in 1889, almost as old as Canada itself.
Hmm.
Justice Morgan was forced with the vexing problem. It was vexing, Douglas.
Oh, no.
I remember back when I was in school... one of the teachers, she had become vexed by something I did or said. Can you believe that?
No.
Yeah, me either. But I speak the truth. What is the best date on the judicial ruling? How settled is settled law? So can a court's decision go stale?
Good question.
I've been in... how about after more than a century, this was a valid handwritten decision, and it was issued in 1889... after a 5-day trial by Justice Thomas Ferguson, sitting in the Ontario Court of Justice Chancery Division, which was the Superior Court of Record for Ontario at the same time.
Hmm.
Have you become bored with it, Douglas?
Not at all.
You sound as though you're bored. But what if it was wrong? And what if it took 135 years to see why it was wrong? Certainly a lot was at stake, literally thousands of square kilometers of land near Sudbury, Ontario, which was arguably never ceded by the First Nations band that previously occupied it.
Who was the band? Where was this?
Oh, my gosh, Doug.
And up near Sudbury.
Yeah, near Sudbury.
Yeah.
Looks like it's Cree?
No, band? It's Ojibwe.
No, Ojibwe band?
Yeah.
Is now based west of Sudbury on reserve lands measuring just 174 kilometers.
Okay.
Square kilometers.
Huh. So west of Sudbury.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
So I guess everything is fine now? It was like the end story. Far too long. I don't want to read any more of that. Douglas.
Yes.
Have you anything for me?
No, I'm wondering if I missed something. I didn't miss it. No, I don't see it.
You have nothing.
Well, no, I don't have anything for you other than I've got a few pieces of music ready to go.
Oh, wait, here's the Yukon thing.
Oh, okay. That was what I mentioned to you.
You were talking Yukon.
A little bit of Yukon.
Here it is. Mm-hmm. Yukon courts okay rare indigenous bid for mine ownership.
Ooh.
So there could be a landmark new life in the abandoned Minto copper gold mine in the Yukon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Copper gold. Is that like a new thing?
Copper mine.
Gold mine.
Oh, okay.
The territory's Supreme Court has approved a private bid by the Selkirk First Nation to buy the mine's facilities and some of its equipment in a milestone ruling on the way to what could be one of the first Indigenous ownerships of a mine in Canada.
Wow.
So the court did approve... receiver PricewaterhouseCoopers has been overseeing the mine on traditional Selkirk territory for more than a year.
Mm. They should sell it for a dollar.
A dollar?
Yes. Done.
A dollar?
Yeah. They should do well.
You
yeah.
ever see that one? There's like a person on the YouTube.
No.
I'll show you after.
They should use the language of the original treaties.
Yeah.
Yeah. The coin of as listed in Montreal.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. The value of a dollar.
A dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at that, though. It's vast.
It is. They have tailing ponds there, though. Yes. And I'm worried about those, you know, so... So if you buy the mine, doesn't matter who it is, but if the next group buys the mine, they're going to have to deal with what's in that tailing pond.
Yes.
There's going to be arsenic.
Environmentally, they would...
And a few other things that are going to be deadly.
Yeah, dealt with.
Yeah. That's why I said sell it. At this point, just sell the mine for a dollar.
Just $1.
Yeah, because it's going to cost you way more than that
people.
Just to clean it up.
The Minto people got their their couple of bucks out of it.
Well, that's something that we were talking about, the biodigester.
Maybe they could put one there.
Yeah, but the mitigation. What's the risk in case something happens, and what's the mitigation? And, you know, like this mine, the company wants to get out of the dealing with the mitigation part. They didn't mind taking the gold and the copper away.
We don't have to deal with the cleanup, though.
No, not at all.
What do you? But that's your responsibility. No, it's not. It's cutting into our profits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Uh, The Yukon government will continue to prioritize opportunities for the involvement of the Yukon First Nations in economic opportunities associated with mining activities. Laura Seeley, a cabinet spokesperson, told Mining.com, a sister publication of the Northern Miner. By email, this court decision offers significant opportunities for the Selkirk First Nation. And we look forward to the benefits that could bring to the First Nation, the region, and a broader territory.
So that's pretty good. You know, if good.
I hopefully everything works out.
Yes, yeah. Do you want some music?
I have
DJ Shub set up ready to go for you. And he's got one called Calling All Dancers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's instrumental, so I hope that's okay. But, yeah, Calling All Dancers, DJ Shub.
We'll be right back. I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband, Tom, and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you. For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
Keep up with what's hot on CFRC Airwaves. Find us today on Instagram and Facebook. Follow us at CFRC Music and keep your finger on the pulse of Kingston's best music mix.
My name is Stephen Brooks. I'm an emergency doctor and researcher in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Queen's University. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest affects about 35,000 people across Canada every year. The sooner treatment begins, the higher the probability of recovery. Neighbors Saving Neighbors is a pilot program to improve survival for people who experience sudden cardiac arrest in Frontenac County. Let us teach you how to do CPR, use an AED, and become a lifesaver. Consider becoming a Neighbors Saving Neighbors volunteer.
Apply today at frontenacparamedics.ca.
Over the last three seasons, the Queens Gaels have had the Ottawa GG's number. These teams have played seven times since 2021, and Queens has walked away victorious on all seven occasions. For each of the last 3 years, Ottawa's season has ended at Richardson Memorial Stadium. But with every game played, the margin of victory gets tighter and tighter. In 2023, the Gaels won their two matchups by 7 total points. On Saturday, September 14th, the two Titans of the OUA East rekindle their rivalry once more as the Gaels make the short trip up the 416 to play the GGs in Ottawa. Will the Gaels make it an elite 8 in a row, or will the GGs finally snap their post-pandemic losing streak? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM at 2:45 for the pregame show ahead of the 3 p.m. kickoff. We hope to see you then.
Oh, This is A Day to Listen with your host, William Prince.
And our next guest is Mimi Obonswin, a fellow musician. You'll hear her make a brilliant comparison between songs and seeds as she talks about her relationship to the land.
Kwai kwai, bonjour, je m'appelle Mimi Obonswin. I'm from northeastern Ontario. I'm really proud to be here as an Abenaki woman from Odanak and a Francophone from Sudbury. I'm a root singer-songwriter and composer, and I love to make art, to make music, and to grow food. One way that I've been reclaiming my roots and returning home when my culture is through music and through gardening and growing food and foraging. So plants and music to me are really similar, the way they kind of pull on that creative muscle, or how they pull on your spirituality and your roots as a person. Outside of our community. My community is called Odanak, and it's in the province of Quebec, but I grew up in northeastern Ontario. And the more that I learn about what it means to be Abenaki and rediscovering my roots and rediscovering my family, my community, the more that it explains the things that I have inside of me. My whole life I grew up playing in the bush by myself, spending a lot of time on the land. We always had like animals and big gardens and talking to trees and all these things, and I always kept that with me, even when I lived in Toronto. So when I started learning about plant medicine and our traditional foods and all these things, you know, it just kind of validated that thing inside me. And it's the same with music. My parents told me that I sang before I could talk, and I always played music, and I always drew inspiration from, you know, my roots. So to kind of bridge the gap between those two things, just like I bridged the gap between the two identities that make me who I am, I feel empowered and I feel connected. For me, music is really healing, and through the difficult times in life, music is always there. So you always have a friend in music, you always have someone you can trust, and it's a really healthy path to express yourself. And I always think that there's a lot of different ways we can use music, whether it's just for ourselves, or it's to share, or it's to perform. There's so many different levels. When I work with youth, I really focus on the empowerment aspect, because, you know, I can empathize with what it feels like to be young and to feel like you're stuck in a box, and to have a little bit of an outlet and permission to express yourself through music, I think is something that our youth really need. There's so much healing that needs to be done in our communities all over, and the youth are there and they're open. So I personally learn a lot from doing songwriting with youth, and it's really amazing the stories they have to tell. So I just love it. Reconnecting with the land for me just kind of happened. It's not something I planned to do, but it's something that just happened. And I think those are the things that we need to pay attention to. So I started growing a lot of our food and, you know, working with my partner in music, but also in the garden. It's a really healthy way to decolonize your world, because you're producing this food, you have a relationship with this food, and it's something we need to nourish our spirits and our bodies and everything. And it's just really, really powerful. So to be able to nurture these young plants and to be able to harvest them at this time of the year, and it also changes your relationship with water. It changes your relationship with animals. It changes your relationship with soil. So we're always kind of building the soil and listening to what the land needs and how we can work with the land instead of against it. And I think there's something really powerful there. So for me, seeds are very much like songs. You have these little things you put down, whether it's a thought or a seed or an emotion or something, and then you nurture it, you give it some water, you give it some love, and then it blossoms into this beautiful thing. I think truth and reconciliation is also very much like seeds of hope, and we can spread the seeds around, nurture the soil, nurture the seeds, take care of each other, and hopefully we have a beautiful garden that we get to share.
I've had a similar experience teaching through songwriting, working with youth in Iqaluit. I worked with a man named Mick who would write songs and play guitar every day, as well as hunt on the land for his family. I love when she said seeds are like songs. While I have you, I hope you'll look up some of Mimi's music too.
A Day to Listen 2022. Find more Indigenous stories, art, and culture at adaytolisten.ca.
da ga hi ye shinna da tri shinna da al ka se ya ne yang a shinna da ki de la o ki de la o a he ya ne yo o a he ya ne yo o shinna da ki de la o ki de la o a he ya ne yo o a he ya ne yo o ka po ka de ti ni ye shi ki je na ki go ka po ka Do istida shinna da kine la hey ane yo wo hey ane yo wo
This is A Day to Listen with your host, Kaylee Cardinal.
Next up, another guest who will speak about preserving our languages. Jonah Hupfield teaches her languages as well as Indigenous studies, and she loves nothing more than seeing young people learn where they came from.
Bojo, Ani, Nawantinokwe Indigenikas, Wabshi, Shi, and Dorem. Wasoxing in Donjiba Mill Lake in that Nishnabe Kwe Minwa Jagnash Kwe in Dao. My name is translated into English as Calm Waters Woman. I am from the Martin clan and I'm originally from Wasoxing First Nation, but I live on Mill Lake. I'm English and Ojibwe. Some know me as Jonah Hupfield, and I teach in Anishinaabemowin as well as Indigenous studies. I am teaching in my homelands of where I grew up, talking about Ode, talking about Debwewin, the things that are true to us, the things that are true to our heart, which sounds really far out there when you think maybe some youth don't say that out loud. But when we're sitting together in a circle speaking in Ojibwe and doing our introductions like I did at the beginning of this talk, knowing who we are, where we come from, to the best that we can, because not all of us know those words and know how to say them in Ojibwe, have been passed on from our who we consider our families or who we live with in our communities. But once we have those basics, you start to see, or I start to see, youth really want to further their understanding. And so for our Indigenous students, it can be a big part of their bundle of learning something that comes from within themselves. So some people call that the beginning of the eighth fire. Some people say we're within the eighth fire. I would definitely say these kids want to speak in Ojibwe to each other. Like, it's fun. They really do just want to talk, learn how to say, how are you doing? They want to be able to hold a conversation. And that's a big, powerful piece of youth voice, of holding a space for them where they can trust and feel culturally safe to speak in Ojibwe. And we have other people who come in. We have a cultural knowledge carrier who comes in and does big drum with us. Those songs are thousands of years old, you know, from Sitting Bull. And the students realize they're singing songs that are in that language and have been carried on and moved into the future. So what our ancestors have wanted for us and hoped for us to carry forward. And it's been hard. That's a lot of work. But when you start to see what we call spirit lines connecting us to the past and moving forward for youth, it's a really important time. When we hear people speak Anishinaabemowin, like our Kukums, our Nokmus, our Meshomasuk, our aunties, our uncles, our cousins, the few who are about our age that are hearing that, and just now, language camps that occur here in Ontario, who are now only speaking Anishinaabemowin, we do their Binojisak with their babies. And now these babies are, I hear, they're talking to each other in Anishinaabemowin. So, and now we say, you know, this is what our ancestors wanted, but now it's, we do this for the babies. And so when I work with Oshkenink, the youth, it's, we're doing this as older cousins. Oh, I'm getting emotional here. You know, we do it as, some kids I work with are aunties and uncles. So we speak in Ojibwe to help. And we're starting to see that happen. So it's cool. And that's really nice about these language camps, immersion camps. And I see youth like Oshkenink, they want to dapanan and Anishinaabemowin wiji kinawayas. They want to pick up that language with each other and have it everywhere with everyone. We're in such a radical time for change. Change for youth in the world that we live in.
Jonah Hupfield, who you just heard, is a mother to five, a daughter, a sister, an auntie, a cousin, and again, an Indigenous educator. So you can see why she cares about preserving Indigenous language through generations. Find out more about all the different Indigenous languages at adaytolisten.ca. There are many.
my name is Chris McCool from Sultans of String, and we're recording our ninth album, a beautiful collection of collaborations with First Nations, Métis, and Inuit artists across Canada. We're making this album in the spirit of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 94 Calls to Action and Final Report that asks for Indigenous and non-Indigenous people to work together as an opportunity to show a path forward. We know that as a country, we can't move ahead without acknowledging and reflecting on the past. Before reconciliation can occur, the full truth of the Indigenous experience in this country needs to be told. So we've been collaborating with Indigenous artists to share with us their stories, their experience, and their lives, so we settler Canadians can continue learning about the history of residential schools, of genocide, and of intergenerational impacts of colonization. So far, we've been collaborating with Crystal Shawanda with her song called The Rez, growing up on Manitoulin Island. We have a co-write with Raven Kanatukka from Digging Roots, criticizing the residential school system. A co-write with Don Ross from PEI on a song called Highway of Tears, including Winnipeg bassist MJ Dondino on that song. Kendra Taguna and Tracy Sarazen from Baker Lake with both Ayaya and throat singing styles. A co-write with Northwest Territories' Leela Gilday and Leanne Tanagin in the Dene language. Mark Marilinen bringing his cool Najiwan sounds to the record. And from the prairies, the North Sound singing a song about Alberta. And Shannon Thunderbird, originally from BC.
I wrote this song on June the 11th, 2020. The wind raised. By this time, you know, the news had gone across Canada about the finding of the bones of our children from residential school horrors. The first ones were the 215 from residential school in Kamloops. Since then, it's a little over 10,000 now have been found. I was in a lot of tears, thinking about my grandmother, thinking about my mother, thinking about what happened to me. All of these things that came out of this horror.
Also working with longtime collaborator Dr. Duke Redbird, creating a song with his new poem, Our Mother, the Earth.
A great mystery created the universe and manifested a blue geosphere. A radiant planet, the marvelous Earth, the mother who gave us birth.
We've also been working with the Métis Fiddler Quartet on Chanson de Riel.
Chanson de Riel, the words have been attributed to Louis Riel in that he wrote them as a prisoner after being condemned to death. And the story is that the prisoner receives a letter from his mother and, having no way to write back to her, uses a knife to draw blood and write back to his mother. This song speaks to the injustice suffered by Riel. He was condemned to death for treason. There are other themes there too. Riel, who had a very deep love for his family, he's feeling the pain for his mother having to lose a son, and he's also feeling the pain for his children for having to lose a father. Comes out of this collaboration is that we can create more space to have more conversations about our relationships between settlers and Indigenous people.
And if anything, we are opening doors for each other as Indigenous peoples, as settler peoples. It's just about creating more openings and more connections through being a conduit, as Colin said, and through creating more spaces. Like, the more doors, the more spaces we open and we create together.
We've been consulting with Indigenous advisors, designers, and filmmakers to keep us going down the right path. We also met with the Honorable Murray Sinclair to speak about the project.
Well, the very fact that you're doing this tells me that you believe in the validity of our language, you believe in the validity of our art and our music, and that you want to help to bring it out. And that's really what's important, is for people to have faith that we can do this, that we should be allowed to do this. So I think in part of the collaboration that you're doing, it's about taking advantage of the positions and the knowledge and the contacts and the resources that you have as non-Indigenous people, facilitating the entry into the world of video, demonstrating talent, and making that available to the rest of the public, and also to communicating with the non-Indigenous community. Listen to this. This is worth listening to. That's good.
One of the themes that keeps coming up is the importance of using Indigenous languages in our collaborations. One of our co-writes is with the powwow group Northern Cree.
One of the things that we use our music for is to teach our people our language. A lot of our songs have lyrics utilizing our language. It's the very tip of who